hello. What is this hitting your earwaves? But a special episode of the Bat-Ass Podcast, the BATTASS Podcast, where we talk about Batman the Animated Series. My name is Clay McCormick. With me, as always, is Sean. Sean, I can't even remember the last time we did this. Let me look it up here.
It's been at least a year, right?
I think so. It's to the point where I've deleted most of my old files, so it's been a minute.
It's funny. I had a really good cold open throw you off, because that's kind of my tradition, is to throw you a curveball right from the beginning.
Sure.
All right, you ready?
Sure.
My sister really likes you, man.
Oh, that's great. That's not the first time I've heard that.
Really?
Yeah, please, so elaborate.
We were in Denver, you and me and Corinne, doing a panel discussion. And my family's never been to a comic con before, ever. So my sister brought her two kids. Mm-hmm. Parents were there. And they don't know anything about any of this stuff outside of the Big Bang Theory. Right.
Sure.
And my sister was like, after, she's like, man, your friend Clay has real like stage presence in his voice. And she said he has Orson Wellian type timing. I'm like, whoa, he's going to love that.
I do. As long as I don't have an Orson Wellian type waistline, I think I'll be okay.
You must have a decent Orson Welles accent.
Ready
to go.
Not really. I don't really. He's kind of tough to do, because I think it's very easy to go too over the top with him. I don't know if I've ever really tried, but I'll work on it.
I think about Pinky in the Brain. I feel like the brain is a little bit like Orson Welles, and you got to be like, oh, I'm not even going to try, man. I'm going to embarrass myself.
So according to my records here, this can't be right. It says the last episode that I have in my records says 2023, but it's been more recent than that. Definitely more recent than that. But anyway, it's been a while. But why are we back? We are here to talk about Sean has been waist deep in Justice League Unlimited, preparing for a new volume of Batman White Knight. And it's come across a couple episodes that we may have missed featuring Batman, and more specifically Terry McGinnis' Batman Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, Sean has a new book coming out pretty soon, which we've talked about on the show before, The Last Driver. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But yeah, we're going to talk about two episodes of Justice League Unlimited. They are Justice League, The Once and Future Thing, Part 1, Weird Western Tales, and Part 2, Time Warped. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about those.
You've traveled about 50 years into your future.
And the Watchtower?
It's gone. We lost a lot of good people that day.
You mean Superman? Jean? All the others?
Yeah. You too. And the Batcave? This is all we have left now. Deal with it.
Okay. Justice League Unlimited.
Wait, what was the other girl? Who was the other sister that thought you were cool?
I don't know.
You said you heard it before.
That's just something people say. It's never happened.
Okay,
it's,
sorry.
It's never happened. Nobody thinks I'm cool. It's like the first time in my life anyone's ever said that to me. So thanks, Sean's sister.
Yeah, sorry.
Once in Future Thing, Part 1, Weird Western Tales, written by Dwayne McDuffie, directed by Dan Reba. And this one, Batman, Wonder Woman, and Green Lantern chase a mysterious being called Kronos to the past. After they catch him attempting to steal equipment from the Watchtower, they soon find themselves in the Old West, whereupon they learn that Kronos has had his technology stolen by bandits led by Tobias Manning. The group quickly work to prevent trouble, working with local legends of the time, but Kronos soon uses his recovered technology to return to his time, creating an even worse situation for the group. And Part 2, also written by Dwayne McDuffie, directed by Joaquim Dos Santos. And in this one, Batman, Green Lantern, and Wonder Woman find themselves in Gotham City in the future, aided by the surviving members of the Justice League, Rex Stewart / Warhawk, Static, and Batman of Batman Beyond of that period. In battling the Jokers, the time travelers soon learn that Kronos is making irreparable damage to history that could erase the universe. Note, the Joker scene in this episode previously appeared in the film Batman Beyond, Return of the Joker, as the Joker's henchman. Mm-hmm. So, Did you just
there, man?
Did you just find these two naturally as you were watching through the show?
Yeah, so I'm working on volume 4 of White Knight with you, and mm-hmm. I wanted to get through all of these just so I have a better sense of the Justice League.
Yeah,
that way I wouldn't have to read a bunch of comics.
which is par for the course.
Yeah, I know. At this point, it seems to be working. So, and I came across these, and I was like, oh, we almost missed one here where Batman meets Batman. We got some Beyond stuff too. There's plenty of reasons why we should dip into this one.
Yeah.
And I was just sort of waiting for an excuse. And you mentioned doing a podcast about Last Driver. So I said, let's just throw it all together.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Had you watched any of Unlimited before?
Only we did the epilogue episode.
Right.
I think I tried to watch a few Green Arrow ones, which I enjoyed, but for some reason it never really pulled me in. But I really did get into it. I admit I skipped the first Justice League. It's not great. Yeah. Justice League Unlimited is way more watchable.
Yeah. 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 I'll tell you, it makes me a little bit disappointed because, for how sort of, ass dragging Batman Beyond was towards the end for us, because it was kind of so formulaic and didn't never really hit the heights that we hoped it would. These two episodes of Justice League Unlimited are way better than Batman Beyond.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of kooky time travel shenanigans that, if you think about it too much, it doesn't make sense. But yeah, if you just go with it, you know, like this guy's wife giving him shit in his garage, like, I was locked into that. I don't even know those characters, but yeah, I thought it was extremely compelling.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's honestly, I think right away the difference is that, well, I mean, the first episode after the scene with the Kronos guy and his wife is yelling at him. I think it's after that. Anyway, the next scene is Batman and Green Lantern sitting around the table in the Watchtower talking about relationship stuff.
So,
and
right,
I'm so into it. And it's it's like the thing missing from Batman Beyond is this character stuff that these two episodes do so well, because it's not all character stuff, but they drop it in just at the right points.
Yeah, you're right. So I was going to ask you, what have you seen for Justice League? Because if you just stopped watching at Batman Beyond and suddenly jump in on this episode, we've got a space station, a space cafeteria, and Batman talking about chicks. It's a lot of whiplash there.
Yeah, I had watched a bunch of the first season when it was just Justice League. I don't know if I ever made it all the way through. And I didn't watch Justice League Unlimited when it was on. But I think I caught a couple episodes here and there, so I kind of got the gist of it. I think maybe I might have watched the first episode when it's like, here's every single character from the DC Universe, and they're all part of the Justice League now. But it's not something I ever caught up on. But honestly, after watching these two, I might go back and just watch them all, because these were really good.
Yeah, they are good. And I think the most helpful thing for me was to watch these and get us... All right, so like my opinion about Justice League for years in this podcast has been, oh, it's so kooky and Silver Age and there's too many colors, and I like Batman and Gotham, I like it grounded. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not necessarily like primed to be a Justice League guy, and here I am writing Justice League. It really helped me get over the candy coated nature of it all and just sort of just go with it.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
Like I thought maybe my next White Knight would be more of hard sci-fi. Like I really wanted to make it more, you know, grounded, like 2001, mm-hmm. keep it very odd and nebulous. But there's just no way to not get into space phaser guns and tights and cowboys and whatever. You know what I mean?
I mean, once you start dealing with Green Lantern, it's kind of, you don't really have much of a choice but to bring out the space police and laser guns and stuff.
Yeah, you're right. I'm still going to try to do a little bit of the 2001 vibe,
sure,
but then it's going to quickly go off the rails and be a space western.
Yeah, well, that's fun. I did know, like, it's surprising how much continuity there clearly is across these episodes, because even just watching, like, it doesn't seem like the kind of show that would do too much continuity because there's so many characters and there's so much stuff going on, and, you know, any episode could be like any combination of five characters. But right. When this one starts, it's like there's stuff that if you haven't watched, you probably missed it. But they do a really good job of very slyly catching you up, specifically when it comes to Batman and Wonder Woman kind of, you know, flirting with each other. And also Jon Stewart and Hawk Girl, I guess, have a thing which has ended poorly or something.
Right. Yeah, no, there's tons of great Batman stuff here. Like, I know Lex is a Superman character, but they don't let go of the threads that they built with, you know, Metropolis and Gotham. Yeah, it's really worth it. I mean, I love Green Arrow. There's so many crazy characters that, like the Atom, that I never even knew about. Oh, yeah. And like, are they ridiculous? Yes, but this is the lore and it's important. And it is interesting to see these writers who are very good, like, tackle these characters. Something about the first attempt at Justice League, everything was like a 2-3-4 parter. So if you missed one, especially back in the, you know, early aughts, there was no way to like TiVo and record it and go back and find, you had to just wait until they all came out on DVD, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So it's harder to approach, and I would love to know why they decided to cut their losses and start over with Justice League Unlimited. So I'm glad that they did.
I actually, I'm not sure exactly why they did that, but yeah, it's, I always kind of felt like the first version of Justice League was like a little too earnest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of is touches on what you're talking about, where it's like the concept in and of itself is a little bit, sorry, I got shit all falling over here. It's a little, it can be a little kooky,
yeah,
a little big.
Yeah.
And, so I think when they kind of just leaned into that a bit more by bringing in all these characters that bring so much different personalities and stuff into it, instead of just like, okay, how is Superman and Batman going to disagree this week?
Right. Yeah. No, so the standout characters for me in this, Hawk and Dove really struck me. Like, they're really crazy looking characters, but I love, you basically have like a political battle between conservative and liberal.
Oh yeah.
But they're brothers, and they're just, I mean, what a fun comic that would be to write. I don't know if I would be able to hold back, honestly. I know I usually put politics into all my writing, but I would be very open to doing Hawk and Dove one day. I'd probably change their outfits a little bit because they look a little bit too ridiculous.
You don't like, white and powder blue with a bird theme?
It's too much, yeah. I love you would love The Question.
Oh, yeah, play. I love The Question, yeah.
This guy, I mean, he's a conspiracy theorist. He's got his own weird little cave in the Watchtower, and, like, he's just down for any kind of conspiracy you got.
Oh,
and
yeah,
his room looks like the X-Files, like, fanzine or something. And he's voiced by the guy from The Reanimator.
Yep, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Great, great choice.
Yeah, very much so. And I also love Vigilante, who's a cowboy for some reason. I thought maybe he had more powers than that. He doesn't. I think it's Vigilante. He's got like a red scarf over his face and a white hat.
Yeah, okay.
Black Canary is up there, and then, of course, Green Arrow.
Yeah, I think, you know, what's cool about it is they get to play with all of these, like, everything is on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell that the writers are having a really good time writing the show. Like, Dwayne McDuffie was clearly having a great time writing this.
Yeah. Yeah. I admit I don't know a lot about Impulse and
Static.
Static, yeah. Thank you. Who's Impulse? Who's the Flash, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know a lot about Static. I should know more about it. I have a lot of friends that wrote that comic. I know that character means a lot to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Duffy was like wholly responsible for that. He was also one of the guys that started Milestone Comics, mm-hmm, back in the 90s. So
yeah, and he's you know, very highly regarded.
Yeah.
Passed away very young, unfortunately, but
yeah, yeah. Other characters I love is Catman.
Wildcat? Shit.
Thank you. Yeah. He's like an old boxer.
Yep.
Yeah, the Ray is great. There's a a knight from King Arthur's Round Table who's just in chainmail and a helmet. And it's just so ridiculous how the hell this guy's supposed to contribute anything, but that he does. Well, I think you're more primed to like this stuff than I am, because like it's so out there that I think you're more likely to be all in than me. Like, I was hesitant, but I eventually bought in. I think you'll love it.
Yeah, I mean, I really like it just from what I've watched. I mean, honestly, it starts off so strong for me because you've got, like, you get into this thing, right, where you're in this universe where you've got, let's be conservative here and say 1,500 superpowered heroes. Like, what could possibly be going wrong on Earth that could not be handled by the amount of people there are with superpowers, right? And right. So instead of just kind of trying to be like, well, okay, I mean, how do we get around? They just lean into it, and they literally have the Watchtower where they all just hang out. Yeah. So, like, that opening scene, seeing Batman drinking coffee, talking to Green Lantern, while Diana walks in with, like, a cafeteria tray full of food is hilarious. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, maybe let me finish up work I'm doing, and maybe you and I can talk. Maybe we should start this series back up and do Justice League Unlimited.
I'd love it. Yeah, that'd be great. It'd be a great excuse to go through and watch it.
What did you think about the episode one and the cowboy stuff?
I thought it was I liked it. It's like I said, I think they managed to. I think that the really good stuff doesn't really happen till the second episode. The first episode is fun, and I think you kind of run into one of the, if you want to call it a crutch of having such a big toy box, is you can kind of just use anybody for any reason, and it just sort of becomes like, oh, hey, it's that guy. So, like, if you go to the Old West, it's like, of course Jonah Hex is going to show up, and then, you know, who else can we, well, Batlash, we can use him, and like, so it's in it, and they're just kind of there to, because it's the Old West, and why not have them there? But in and of itself, I do find that fun, because I, you know, I do love that shit. So
For me, you got knockoff Zorro character there, El Diablo. Yes. You've got Native American character, which you know I love, and we'll get into The Last Driver and stuff later. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Jonah Hex. I'm like, hell yeah, I already know what I want to draw from this.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think that's what's so fun about it, is like you just get this thing where it's like, oh, all of these cool characters are showing up, and it makes it exciting, even if what they're doing is, you know, not particularly, it's just kind of like a normal story, but it's so much fun to see so many different versions of characters and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Batman not using a gun, of course, is cool, but you have to wonder, like, how fast are his batarangs, though? You know?
Right. I think that, like, the writing of this, I think, is so clever, because, you know, you have that great scene where they start shooting at Diana, and she's blocking the bullets with her bracelets, and she says, those are the biggest, slowest bullets I've ever had shot at me.
It's funny, in the second part of this, Terry gets hit with musket fire, and it seems like it hits him really hard, which you think that Beyonce would be able to take a lead musket ball pretty easily compared to lasers. And
I don't know. You know. I mean, it might be a whole different setup. I mean, maybe they don't use lead in the future anymore. Maybe it's, you know, could be just basically like spandex to a gunfire.
Do you want to? So I guess we're talking about the first episode now. Do you want to tell me what you'd want to draw out of this first part?
Man, I love Jonah Hex. I love that design with that weird scarred up face. I'm a big Western. I've actually after Denver, the couple weeks later, my wife and I went to, that's another thing that's changed, listeners. I've gotten married.
Oh yeah. Congratulations from all, I'll speak for all the viewers.
Thank you.
Except for maybe a few, the ones whose sisters have crushes on you.
Exactly. I was just going to say,
beat you to it, buddy.
we went to, San Diego. My wife had a conference. We got to flip the script a bit, where in Denver, I had the conference and she got to explore. And then in San Diego, she had a conference, so I got to explore. I learned that Wyatt Earp he spent a good portion of about 10 years of his later life in San Diego, which I never knew. So yeah. That kind of sent me down a Western rabbit hole. And I've been watching like the Italian stuff, and I've always loved Westerns. But it's funny because I went down a Wyatt Earp rabbit hole, and you kind of went down a Doc Holliday rabbit hole while you were out in Colorado.
I know. We're really getting to the tombstone of it all.
Yeah.
It's funny because I've done Zorro and I know the history of California, you know, northern Mexico. And I totally didn't register that San Diego obviously is a place that the Old West cowboys knew of and might have spent time in. I just think that when you and I go for Comic-Con, it's just so overbuilt now. We forget that, like, we've been to Old Town San Diego, it really is more legit. You've got like Spanish style roofs and old, mission style buildings. But yeah, the downtown area, the gas lamp and all have been overdone. So when you show me a photo of Wyatt Earp's bar or hotel, I was like, man, I've walked past that building dozens of times for 20 years. And it never occurred to me to go in and that he owned that bar.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty cool. It's a surprisingly seamy history where it used to be called, that whole area used to be called the Stingery. And it was basically just all bars and brothels and there was multiple bars that had like Bucket of Blood as part of it, the name of the bar.
Oh, wow.
Like there was one called the Seven Buckets of Blood. There was another one called the Tub of Blood.
Whoa.
Yeah. I don't know why that was such a hot title for bar, but.
Do you think in the Old West they knew like, one day people are going to look back on this time and they're going to think this is awesome. And if we name more things after blood, it's just going to add to the mystery of it all.
Do you think they had any idea? I do not think that.
They're like, oh God, I have a snake bite. I wish there was an antidote. I wish medicine was better.
Yeah. Maybe that. Maybe they might have thought that. Yeah. But I don't know if anybody really thought it's just, that stuff was
going to
last.
So wild that, you know, your dad could sort of remember the Civil War and the 15 years, give or take, that was basically the Old West time window. And if you lived to be 100, you would have seen a man on the moon. That's just nuts to me. You see horses to rockets, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the Wyatt Earp died, I think, in the 20s, maybe the late 20s or something. And so, like, he was actually a consultant in Hollywood.
Right.
At the end of his life, which is crazy because you think the Wild West feels so far removed from everything, you know, and because of the legends and stuff, it just kind of feels almost like, you know, like King Arthur, like it never really existed. Like the time period is very, very distant, but it's not that far back. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've been reading a lot about Native American history except for my book. So I'm very tuned in this stuff right now. And, you know, some characters, like I think maybe Sitting Bull was one of them, who joined Wild Bill, and they did Native American reenactments all over the East Coast. Mm-hmm. Because on the East Coast, we had been so removed from Native American stuff for so long that we were more like, oh, leave them alone. Leave the Navajo alone. No more, you know, we got to really pull back. Like, we had more of a liberal mentality because we hadn't really seen that stuff for 100 or 200 years. Whereas if you're on the frontier, it's a different story, you know? And there's tons of, you know, fingers can point and blame each way, you know, of course. But, you know, Wild Bill, without him doing his tour with real Native Americans that were actually at these battles, who luckily had like a second act to their careers performing, like, was it ridiculous? Were they being exploited? Yeah. But also, we might not have been able to understand our own history without doing that. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Because, I mean, you know, Indians just basically just became boogeymen at a certain point.
Yeah.
So it's important to understand exactly what they're all about.
It's funny. So when the Native American character in this episode, I'm not going to try to do it, but there's like a Native American voice.
Yeah, please don't.
It's funny because Key and Peele, if you watch that, he'll do the taller one. Is it Key?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He can get away with anything because he's so good at it, but he'll do a great Native American, like a broad Native American voice. And it's just so interesting. Yeah. I'm not even going to try. But
thank you.
I wonder where that group comes from. Like that voice comes from, like, is that more of a Navajo style Native American voice or East Coast? I have no idea.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah. Was there more? Sorry, I didn't know.
That was it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I just want to ponder the racism of it all and then not touch. I don't want to touch the laser beam.
I mean, if you want to do the voice, we definitely get a lot of press for an episode coming back.
How about I'll do Orson Welles and you do an Indian? Go.
Hello, my name is Charles. I'm 1/8 Native American.
Hi, I'm Orson. Sorry about the radio thing.
Yeah, and you know, it's always fun to see. I think one of the super fun things about this too is you can do an episode like this and throw these characters into the Old West, like because I think Jonah Hex shows up in Batman the Animated Series, right? Because there's that whole episode about the origins of Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah,
but like
it's a great one-parter.
Yeah, but like there, it's like well, he doesn't meet Batman. Because that show is relatively grounded enough that they're not going to send Batman back in time. But this one, you can do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. What did you think of the dinosaur robots and all the crazy big robots at the end?
That's a really great question because I don't actually remember that because I may have fallen asleep.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, so at the very end, part one, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman find a ranch, and this guy, he has like a space gun on him. So they realize he's time traveling and stealing shit from the future.
Yep.
They go on the ranch, and they find out it's all booby-trapped with cameras and, you know, futuristic tech, including pterodactyls, which Wonder Woman blasts through, and I'm not sure she knew it was a robot when she blasted through it.
Oh, I do remember that. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I was thinking the same thing. It's like, man, that's really lucky that that was a robot.
Yeah. Like she thought she'd be covered in blood, and instead it was a robot.
Yeah. Do you think she was disappointed by that? Like, do you think she was like, finally a dragon I can blast through, and then it's like, it's a robot?
Yeah. She's probably delighted because she thought she was going to have to take a shower of blood after, and instead it was just circuitry and sparks, you know.
Sparks are a lot easier to get out of your clothes. Yeah.
And then but it went to the point where you have giant mechs coming out of the ground piloted by rednecks and cowboy hats. It was so ridiculous.
I think I might have dozed off that part.
Yeah, well, go back, man. Before you defend this episode too much.
I mean,
but yeah,
the tonal
shift is wild.
Yeah, I'm with an episode like this, I'm down for it. I mean, in a two-parter where you can have one of the Joker gang get sent back to the extinction of the dinosaurs as a punishment.
Yeah, talk about how dark that was.
Yeah, the whole episode, there's a lot of dark stuff going on.
Yeah. Did you fall asleep for the second part too? Or
no,
just the first part?
No, I was wide awake for part two.
Okay, good. Why don't we get into part two then?
Okay. So did you have something specific you wanted to draw from the first one? Just those Western guys?
Yeah, I would do just a pinup of the, what's his name? The Native American character.
Ooh, good question.
Bat Flash.
There's Bat Lash, but he's not the Native American guy.
Oh, okay. I wish I knew who his name was, but I like him. El Diablo, which is like knockoff Zorro, and Jonah Hex. I think that'd be a cool. I do have a Western in me I want to do one day.
Yeah. Do you think they dropped the ball by not having a cowboy/western-themed look for Batman? Like, because I know he just gets into normal clothes. But, you know, I feel like he could have had, like, a hat with ears on it or something.
He's just a guy in a black trench coat. Like, his color palette is the same.
Yeah.
And he's still, But it's funny, because the time travel guy here, he just stole Batman's utility belt from Green Lantern and Wonder Woman. And who shows up? Green Lantern and Wonder Woman. Some guy named Bruce Wayne?
Yeah.
The clues are there, man.
Yeah, you know, speaking of Bruce Wayne, one thing I did notice is that Kevin Conroy's Batman voice is a lot softer. It's a lot like, it doesn't have as much grit to it. Specifically like when they're in the watchtower, it's almost Bruce Wayne voice, not quite that relaxed, but it's closer to that than it is like in the new adventures when he's just Batman all the time.
Yeah. I wonder if Kevin ever gave an interview talking about how he chose to do his line reads and maybe alter the character, soften him a bit for all the colorfulness of the JLA. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It would, I can maybe there's probably a recording somewhere of his first take where he's like, "I don't want to talk about Diana." And it's like, nah, that's not really the right tone.
And you're like, Kevin, this is, you know, Steven from the booth.
Yes. Hello, Steven.
You know, Batman's in a space cafeteria, right?
What?
maybe ease up.
What is the show about?
It's that they're all bored.
So yeah, moving into the second episode. The tag at the end of the first one is that they get sucked into the future and they meet the future Justice League, or what's left of them anyway.
Love that.
Yeah, it's a great cliffhanger. Especially, is that where Warhawk looks at Jon Stewart and goes, "Dad?"
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
I think it must be. It makes too much sense not to be.
Yeah, it's too much of a button. Why wouldn't you hit it?
Yeah. But yeah, so we're in the... I guess this is sort of like... Is this an alternate future? Because it's kind of depressing if it's just the beyond future that apparently the entire Justice League has been murdered.
Yeah. I don't think it's clearly defined for a reason. And especially since... It starts going more off the rails. You have Jon Stewart suddenly changing into Jordan.
Hal Jordan, yeah.
Yeah, and a couple other things happen. Terry gets murdered.
Yeah, he does. Because, he gets killed, right?
Yeah, it's brutal, man. He gets ripped apart by four DDs with laser whips.
Terrible way to go.
And you see Bruce on his lonely computer like, "Oh, no, Terry." Like, a sad pull out. Yeah, that's brutal. Like, I don't know what's worse, that or... being, you know, killed by the meteor that killed the dinosaurs.
Yeah, that's just inspired choice to send someone back to the extinction of the dinosaurs.
You know, I'm impressed that the Joker gang gets so much play in the whole Bruce Timm universe. Mm-hmm. You know, what started out as kind of a joke with the Halloween costumes and a bad Christopher Walken impression, like here they are now with, you know, augmented cybernetic parts. One guy's on a rolly ball, like, it's amazing how, and I love it. The only voice they didn't get back was Henry Rollins, which I noticed immediately for Kronk.
Right, yeah, that's too bad.
But I love how, it's funny, because like, I don't necessarily see that time-traveling guy, this nerdy, pasty, skinny white dude, hiring these Joker gang people. Like, that doesn't quite click, but I don't know what else they're supposed to use as a gang to fight.
Yeah.
In this, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's too much fun. Clearly, they're just using characters that they like, because, you know, they clearly have a soft spot for the Beyond stuff because they've used it a few times. And Static, I think Static had his own show, right, for a while?
Yeah.
Static Shock. He did. And obviously, Dwayne McDuffie's writing it, so... makes sense that the Static would be in there. And it's cool to see old man Static. He looks cool.
Yeah. I'm a sucker for old white dreadlocks on aging black men. I think that's always a pretty cool look.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good look. And I think as Static, he has like a cool waist length jacket, but now that he's old, he's got a big old trench coat, which is fun.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, flying around on a disc, if I was inventing him, I would have pushed to make it something cooler. But like more of a skateboardy type object. I don't know, something about being on a disc, standing in that position. Like, a few characters in Marvel and DC do that. Like Guardians, they kind of ride around on an object in a weird position that I just don't think is as aerodynamic and cool as it could be.
Yeah, like who is it? Orion. The
yeah, exactly.
I love how friggin' awkward that is. Like I have no idea where like the weight distribution of that thing he rides is. It's insane.
Look him up. I forget. I know that you, that's the character I was trying to talk
about. Yeah, there's not like seat. Yeah. It's just like a chest harness with like stirrups that he puts his feet into.
Yeah.
And he kind of rides almost like he's skiing. It's very strange.
Yeah. It's like you're on a Stairmaster and you just rip off the parts that you're actually interacting with and you leave the shell behind and you just ride that into space.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it looks real, like it's a quintessential Kirby design. And it looks cool in a drawing, but like once you start going like, how the hell does this work? It's like, oh.
Yeah. No, I wonder when he designed that, he must have thought, well, I don't want to cover up his muscles. I'll just make it like two tubes and like a space belt. And there's nothing like it, honestly. Like, to his credit. you see that thing from a mile away, you know it's Orion.
Yeah, I mean, all of those New Gods characters are just insane looking. which is great.
Just looks like they have diarrhea while they're riding on top of those things.
Yeah, they get that Kirby like grimace, teeth out grimace. That's kind of not really sure what the it's applicable to many different emotions.
I know, we've all had the Kirby grimace after a night out getting too drunk.
So we learn that the apparently the Justice League has been killed, and the only people left are Warhawk, Terry, and who's the third one? And Static, I guess. It's just them, right?
Yeah. Good. It's a good team up. I love, again, Warhawk, such a great costume design.
Yeah.
Forgot that they... Well, I guess there was no mention of his lineage when
no,
they first
I don't think so.
Touch on this. Yeah. So I don't know if he ever took his helmet off before and you saw that he had green eyes. If they retconned it, I'm not sure.
Yeah. But yeah, you've got this cool future where, again, it just lets them play around with stuff because Kronos has been essentially building his kingdom, stealing stuff from the past, which has started like a temporal rift that's screwing everything up, and it's a lot of fun.
What do you think about Bruce versus old Bruce and the like, them teaming up to interview/torture
I love
the
that.
Joker.
That was great. I really like it, especially when they cut to I forget maybe it's Warhawk who's like, Batman's playing good cop, because old man Bruce is just so much more brutal than Batman.
It's funny because Batman is literally holding this guy by his foot over a building, and old Batman is like, I can't believe I was ever so green. And then he steps in, and then they cut to commercial, and then you get back, and it's this Joker spilling his guts.
Yeah.
So this old man with a cane said or did something horrible during the commercial to make him talk.
Yeah, he like put a nail through his nutsack or something. Just.
I mean, the first time old Bruce steps out of the shadows, what is he saying? Like, they're all dead. Like, get used to it. He says something overly aggressive. Mm-hmm. I'm like, really, man? You're seeing your younger self and you're still going to be a dick?
I mean, wouldn't you? Like, if you ran into your younger self, wouldn't you be like, hey, smarten up?
I'd be like, don't buy that Datsun. See ya. Well, so I imagine in this universe, Bruce is aware of time travel, so he must have prepared himself for the possibility of running into himself one day. He must be ready for it. It's not like you and me suddenly seeing ourselves and everything we understand is suddenly flipped over. Like, Bruce knew this might happen, so maybe he would be more prepared for it.
He is fairly nonplussed by either one of them are not really that affected by it, yeah. That's a situation, though, where, like, if, you know, Bruce has to be like, well, I can't be the one to freak out here because I don't want to look weak in front of my other self.
Right.
So we're just going to pretend like this is a normal Tuesday for us.
Good job. I like your different versions of the Conroy voice.
Thanks. it reminds me of, I just watched this movie with a friend of mine called Black Easter, also known as Assassination 33 AD. Huh. Which is a Christian movie.
Oh boy.
About a SWAT team that gets sent back to the night before the crucifixion to kill Jesus Christ.
All right, I'm back in.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's insane. It's worth a watch. It's like it's bonkers. And it's like they actually thought about a lot of the time travel stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's certain things that happen that it's like, oh, that's actually surprisingly well thought out for a movie that this insane. Like they thought about how long it takes the future to change when you change the past. So if they go back to the present, it's like things haven't changed yet. Oh, because it takes longer. It's like they actually say it's like overwriting a disk drive where, like, you know, you have to wait for it to update. It doesn't happen immediately. It's like, oh, okay, well, that's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Which leads to a great scene where after they go back and kill Jesus, which does happen, the first scene of the movie is a SWAT guy shooting Jesus in the face.
Oh.
It's not bloody, though, obviously. But one of the characters gets brought back to the present, but now he's in a present timeline where Jesus never was a thing. And that present timeline is a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and then a bunch of zombies show up and kill everybody.
Wow.
That's insane.
I'm having trouble deciding if I like this or not.
Yeah,
it's religious, so I've got one foot out the door.
It's,
but some of the stuff sounds pretty good.
I would say it's probably the most sacrilegious movie I've seen. Not that I watch a ton of them, but I don't think that it's been very embraced by the community. Let's put it that way.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, what are we talking about? Time travel.
Yeah, time travel. What do you think about the wife character?
She's pretty good. I knew I recognized the voice.
Who is that?
It's Frau Farbissina from Austin Powers. The German lady. Yeah. And Kronos is Peter McNichol, who's Janosch from Ghostbusters 2.
Oh.
Among other
good catch.
Ton of things. Yeah.
Yeah. I sort of love how she's sort of the hero in the end. He's instead of sentencing this guy to jail, Batman catches him in a time loop where his wife is screaming at him over
That's
and over
another
forever.
Thing. It's so dark. Like, that's so brutal. Yeah. I was watching with my wife, and when that happened, she was like, oh, I thought he was going to send him somewhere nice.
Right. Wasn't there a DC or Marvel movie where a character was cursed to get punched over and over and over for eternity as well?
Oh, that wouldn't surprise. I don't remember that off the top of my head, but that's pretty good.
I forget. Yeah. I wondered if I got it from this idea, this episode.
I do like her because she is like, they don't completely nerf her when in the future because, you know, she's obviously become subservient to this guy, but when she leads them to him, she completely screws the whole thing up because she's so pissed at him and thinks he's such a pussy.
Yeah. I love that. I thought she was great. Definitely like the unsung hero of the story. I love her tiny little house. That's like a one bedroom attached to a garage pretty much with a bubble window. He's like, it's funny because he's like stealing all the stuff at the beginning and he's like, oh, you can't steal anything that'll mean anything to history. It's like, you just took the Magna Carta. Like, what are you talking about, man?
They were done using it.
Okay.
Everybody read it.
Yeah. Everyone got it? All right, so we're done with this.
Yeah. Put it in the closet. What else you got to do with it?
Yeah, that's fair.
I did really like, though, that when you get to the Beyond universe, like, the first thing that you see is flying cars and all this futuristic stuff. And then you cut to this guy's house, which is very relatable. Like, his wife is taking out the garbage and he's just like dicking around in the garage, and it doesn't read as the future at all. It just looks like it's, you know,
Like the future hasn't benefited everyone yet. They're clearly low income, living in the sticks.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe they don't have a flying car yet or whatever.
Yeah. They don't have like those weird Google glasses that they have and you know, all the kids have and stuff. Yeah, it's
a weird world where billionaires and the wealthy control the rest of our lives and get away with it, which is clearly impossible.
Yeah, that's a nice segue to talk about your book, which we'll get to in a minute.
Yeah.
My favorite one of my favorite bits is when Batman says, I've written a program to disable his time belt, and I'm like, that's like if you wrote a program using your knowledge of an Apple IIe to try control like an iPhone or something.
You're right. So Batman is from 40, 50 years in the past. And he's got a great floppy disk burner.
Exactly.
He's going to write a program. He's going to assume this guy's belt can play a floppy disk. I mean, it's a mini disk. Okay. So it's from the future.
That's the one thing that, you know, it's funny how the future science fiction stuff kind of nailed it, but then they lost it for a while because everything moved into like, originally it was like, oh yeah, lots of digital stuff, screen-based video, et cetera, et cetera. And then it was like, no, everything is discs. Once CDs came out, it's like, oh, the future is all disc. And then now we're back to tablets and screens again.
I mean, the schools now are pushing towards handwritten homework being done again to make sure kids aren't using AI.
I was just talking to a friend of mine yesterday. She's a high school teacher, and she says, like, yeah, when we do, we used to allow laptops for taking notes, but they don't even allow that anymore a lot of times because they're it's distracting, and obviously the AI component and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you and I don't have kids. I have nieces and stuff. I know you've got small kids in your life, but
Who are family members?
Yes,
small kids who are family members. Thank you.
At your, not at your Neverland Ranch. But yeah, I mean, I know adults my age who are obsessed with social media.
Sure.
The kids obviously have it even worse because, like, they don't even want to be on sometimes, but they know if they miss out, they're going to start being made fun of because they're not keeping up. So they have no choice but to, like, tether themselves to this device.
Yeah.
And they'll watch movies like Stand By Me and be like, oh man, it looks so amazing just to, like, be out in the woods with your friends and no one's judging you. And it's just
you can do that, you know. You can just.
Yeah, I know. But I almost wish that we created a character where there's no AI or there's a low tech character that doesn't use phones and he's out of touch, but that's what's so cool about him, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. That does remind me of when I was in college. I've probably told this story before. My friend and I, we had just finished up our like end of semester big push to get all your shit done. You got to do this thing where you put up all your artwork, et cetera, et cetera. And it was in Brooklyn. And we finished that, and we were like, okay, when we're done, it was either he or I had just bought the second season of Miami Vice. And so we were going to go back and like watch like four or five episodes and just like completely decompress.
Yeah.
So afterwards we went back to my dorm room. I'm on the 16th floor. I have a view of Manhattan. It was an incredible view, and we're watching Miami Vice and the first episode of season two, Crockett and Tubbs go to New York. And, you know, they're doing their thing. They're fighting Gene Simmons or whoever. And at a certain point, like completely unironically, I turned to my friend and went, man, it seems really cool to live in New York. I could see Manhattan from my window, but I am in a completely dark room watching TV being like, man, I just being in New York looks like it'd be really cool.
Yeah, if you got like Blade Runner outside your window and you're just like, oh, I bet it's even cooler in New York, though.
Yeah, yeah.
My friend went to Northeastern and he was in a dorm and it was somewhat new in 2002. And so you're living in a skyscraper, basically, you know, I'm, you know, crashing there on a bed and there's a giant window. And yeah, it's just looking at a cityscape while I'm sleeping. It's like very cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, anyone who graduates probably is never going to be able to afford to live in a place like that ever again. So enjoy it while you can.
Yeah. I do remember the first time. So when I got my room up on the 16th floor, we had this giant window that you could see the Empire State Building, right? And I remember the first year that I got that, the first day that I woke up where it was cloudy and like foggy, and I could not see the skyline, I legitimately got freaked out for a minute because I was half asleep and all of a sudden New York is gone. And so I was like, was there an attack or something? It's like, no, it's just the barometer was low.
Yep. Yeah. It's an explanation.
Yeah.
I liked that even though these two episodes were wildly different and subject and tone, they'd managed to bookend it pretty well with the Hawk character showing Jon Stewart that he does in fact get over his fight with Hawk Girl and they do have a kid and all that.
Yeah,
so it ends back in the cafeteria basically. I thought it was a nice way to tie it all together.
Yeah, and I think they dropped that stuff in during the episode really nicely too, because isn't there a moment where Jon Stewart is like, get away from my son or something?
Yeah. You got to put one of those in.
Yeah. But, you know, they'll drop a little character bit in there. I did really, really love when they first meet them. And Warhawk's like, yeah, you're my dad. And he's like, wait a minute, who's your mom? And he's like, well, isn't it obvious? And then Batman says, well, we probably shouldn't know too much. And then, I think Terry McGinnis is like, yeah. Anyway, Hawk Girl was really nice. It's like, oh, damn it. But yeah, I think it wraps around really nicely, like you said. I think it all ties up pretty well. It's like it's what differentiates these episodes is that they can do this stuff that is just kind of wild and just having fun and doing fun stuff, but it's anchored by good character work.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you ought to watch a few. I can recommend a few episodes off the top of my head that you will love. Yeah, you're definitely primed to really dig this series. I even enjoyed it too. Like it obviously made my work on the next Batman a lot easier without having to read a bunch of stupid comics. But, you know, it's funny because I still don't really have a voice for Wonder Woman. I can't tell if she's like firm military person. I know she's all about right and wrong and justice, but I don't know if she's like a rule follower for justice or a rule breaker for justice.
Right, sure. Yeah, I remember when you sent me the outline for the first issue of the new book. Yeah. There we kind of were talking about that because there was like something that happened that it's like, well, you have this as John doing this, but this kind of makes more sense if Diana's doing this based on what she's done. So yeah, it's you know, that stuff comes as you hack it up.
Yeah, I made a few changes to issue one. You'll notice when you read it and see the artwork and stuff and move some stuff around. It's funny when you actually sit down and draw a page and your brain is in that scene for a whole day. You start to sort of see solutions and problems pop up. And yeah, like if I was just writing for other artists, I don't think I'd be as good at it. I think drawing my own stuff, I can smooth out the wrinkles even more.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because you're kind of editing and rewriting as you're drawing too, you know? Because like I've definitely... I mean, even with other when I'm drawing other people's stuff, I've done this too. But like, you know, you're laying out a page and you have the script next to you, and you're like, well, this layout feels like it could use two more panels or something, you know. And then you could drop those in there, and that solves a problem. And then so,
one of the things I changed. So the spoilers: Superman is only 20, and he's a fan of Batman, and it is. For me, there's no way he couldn't be, because he's grown up his whole life in Kansas, and there's been this cool vigilante named Batman who's been all over the news, and in our universe literally has like toys and shirts and merch and stuff. So when Batman goes
where's
to visit
he
Clark,
getting the merch, Sean?
You're right, I know. But Batman goes to visit Clark to level with him, and he turns on the light in his room and he sees all this Batman stuff, and he's like, uh-oh. Like, he's already dealt with Robins who are fans of Batman. He doesn't want to get into another, he doesn't want to destroy another young soul with his mistakes. Now he's got a kid who's got, you know, the power of an A-bomb. So I remember when I wrote that, you were more hesitant about, like, do we need another fucking bedroom with Batman stuff in it? And you're not wrong. But I sat all day drawing that page, and I became more convinced, like, I have to do this. There's a way to work it in better, but you can't not address this elephant in the room. But I found a way to do it where I think I'll show this to Clay later once it's all drawn, and I think he'll
once
be
I,
more on board.
Once I can't change anything.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I think once I draw it, you see it in action. I think sometimes you come around more.
Sure, sure.
You just bite your tongue for the rest of your life. So who knows?
No, I'm sure it looks great. Is there anything else you want to talk about? What would you draw from this one if you had to pick something?
Oh man, I really like the laser weapons that the Jokers have.
Oh, sure.
And I like this. There's different versions of the laser weapons. I think it would be cool to do like a pinup of them with different versions of lightsabers. Basically, one guy hovering over a rolly ball. You know?
Oh yeah, we didn't even mention that. Chucko has a Darth Maul double bladed lightsaber.
Yeah. So when he pulled that out, I was like, how do they not get in trouble with Lucas for that? But then they show a bunch of other laser weapons, and I think that's the way to get around it.
Yeah. I think laser swords in general are probably okay, as long as you don't say laser lightsaber. I think that's probably trademarked or whatever. But.
So for issue two, for my book, I need to have the Batman team fighting a villain. So I was going to just do Jokers, but then I decided, well, I got to use Azrael. Like, the Sons of Azrael are kind of a thing in the background of my book.
Sure.
What if, like, we reveal that Azrael has two daughters, and that there's one that's red and one that's black? And I thought, well, one has a fire sword, one has a water sword, but, like, what the fuck does a water sword look like? And I thought, oh, it's made out of ice or something. But now I'm thinking they should both have laser swords.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can, because there's the other... The other version of Azrael with the white costume that has has a fire sword. Well, two fire swords, but one of them is blue. So,
oh,
there you go.
You'll have to send me that. I clearly didn't do enough research yet. but I thought if I made it more of a broadsword that's a laser sword, it's less George Lucas-y, and maybe DC will be okay with it. But then after seeing this episode, there's already precedent to have lightsabers. So,
Exactly. Unless you start calling people droids and Asriel, as Asriel's kids are referred to as Jedi, I think you'll be okay.
That's fair.
Or if they say, "Well, you can't have a laser sword," be like, it's not a laser. It's
plasma.
Plasma, hot plasma sword.
Gooey plasma.
Yeah.
Did you say what you'd want to draw?
I would from this one. I do like the Jokers. I like their I love the Christopher Walken Joker's mechanical hand that turns into a buzzsaw.
Oh yeah,
that's pretty good. Yep. Yeah, I'm gonna go with that. I didn't really think about it that too long, but that's probably what I would do. Honestly, I think it would be fun to draw. I say this now, and I would regret this, but I think doing a page of the Justice League hanging out in the cafeteria would be kind of fun.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't love drawing people sitting at tables because I can never make them the bodies. I can never get them to sit right.
That's funny.
But I think that would be fun if you had a double page spread of the Watchtower where it's in the foreground highlighted is Batman and Green Lantern. And then the back, you've just got the rest of the team just doing stuff. That'd be fun.
Cool. I'm looking up White Asriel and I'm just getting the toy, Todd toy, based off my art.
Look up
White.
Michael,
that's not what I want.
Asriel Michael Lane.
Okay, thank you.
It's pretty cool. I was doing a bunch of research on him a few years ago and his version of Asriel, his suit drives him insane. So it's called the Suit of Sorrows, and anybody who wears it, it drives them insane, which I think is different from the one that John Paul has.
Yeah. So one sword is fire and the other is sparkly blue. Is that water?
I don't think it's water. I just think it's, I don't know if it's ice or something. I have no idea. It's just it's blue. They're blue fire.
Because if it was an ice sword and you could whip it and Legend of Zelda, shuck ice out of the sword without losing the blade, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to give it some more thought. Yeah, this is helpful. Thank you. Yeah. Everyone's listening to research in real time for the book.
Yeah, so, usually this happens over text. But speaking of books, you want to talk about The Last Driver a bit?
Sure. Where do I begin? I feel like this is the book I should have done instead of Plot Holes. Mm-hmm. I'm super proud of Plot Holes, but it's more of a journal entry in a way. It's just a lot of different ideas kind of glued together. The Last Driver feels more me all around, and I definitely want it to be my Hellboy moving forward. So I do plan on doing a sequel. The Last Driver, it'll be part two, The Last Biker, and then it'll be The Last Pilot. And then if it's still going, I don't know, The Last Boater, just different vehicles, different chase scenes in the future with different versions of people who are oppressed by wealth and power.
I'm really looking forward to this, the future where rollerblading has been outlawed.
I think we all are. So this started, this agency who I'm not working with, they contacted me and they said, "This is Hollywood producer. He wants to talk to you about something." And I was like, "Sure." And I had this meeting with this guy. I forget his name. I'm pretty sure he was on cocaine. and he wanted a action movie that was medium budget. And, I'd like to think I know what a medium budget movie looks like. But, I work in an office in Maine and I'm not in Hollywood. And I don't know what things cost. So I basically said, "Okay, well, I had this idea that I was going to call The Last Driver." He's like, "Great, why don't you put that together?" So I stop what I'm doing. I call Clay and I say, "Can you help me with this? And, we'll develop it together." And we kind of created it as Escape from New York, but with cars. And we even thought about Kurt Russell because we're like, well, he doesn't want to be in an action movie. But if he's behind the wheel the whole time, maybe that's the way into this. So the original pitch was Kurt Russell character in a car, and he's the only one that pulling off a heist and everyone in the future – Demolition Man, they don't know how to deal with him and they don't know how to stop him, blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. And the guy wasn't into it, and that's fine. I put it on the back burner and I retooled it and made it more political and stuff. And I've been working on it for a year and a half, and Clay has been helping me out, the editors, as always, with all my stuff. So
and it's you're doing it with Image. right?
Yep, Image Comics comes out on August 19th. So you can go to your LCS right now and order it. I don't know if it's final order cutoff yet. But I'll be in San Diego talking about it, pushing it. I've got an Ashcan that we'll be selling in San Diego that's black and white. Mm-hmm. It's on cheap newsprint. And, man, I haven't touched non-coated paper for a while.
Yeah.
There's no way to grab this comic without the oil from your hands immediately, like, embedding itself into the cover.
All of the collectors just groaned when you said that.
I know. Well, here's the thing, though. I'm going to wear gloves when I sign them because...
Oh, nice.
That way, if you get them slabbed and they're... Because they're going to wreck really easily, but in a way, it's good for anybody that has a clean copy and gets it slabbed.
Sure.
Because these things are not meant to last, just like most comics up until, you know, 20 years ago. Anyway, so we'll have those for sale, and then the book will come out in color in stores, and the other thing about it is it's printed sideways.
Yeah.
So it'll be a nice wide format. It still sits up and down on a shelf normally, so shops don't get all pissed off.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see that one in action, standing it up with the staples essentially at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how well it stands. I don't think it's going to just like flop over, but I'm curious to see what it looks like.
Yeah, it's probably going to sag a little bit. Yeah. I did push for thicker paper for a cover just so it has more tinsel strength, yeah. I guess would be the way to describe it. Yeah, we'll see. I know shops, they design their shelving to deal with books up and down, you know, long boxes, same. Like, they don't like it when you put a book sideways. Mm-hmm. As cool as it is for us, you know, they hate it. A lot of readers don't like it either. One guy wrote to me on Instagram. He's like, big fan of your stuff. I hate sideways books, so I'm going to buy it, but then I'm not going to keep it. But I'll buy it a trade, and then I'll put the trade sideways on my shelf because trades can be sideways, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, awesome, man. Thanks cool. for the support.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. I stopped reading when you said I'm going to buy it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't with comments like that, sometimes I can't tell if like English is their second language and they don't know they're coming across as rude. And all they're trying to say is, hey, I like your stuff. Keep going. Right, but sometimes it comes out wrong. So I try to be patient.
Well, and I think it might change his mind once he sees it, because like your double page spreads are literally like 2 feet long. You know, it's like super widescreen comics, and it's you use them to very good effect.
Thanks, man. Yeah. So yeah, by having it sideways, you know, cars are obviously lengthy. You're doing long car chase scenes. I thought it would be cool to utilize 2-page spreads, but it's like drawing on a giant bookmark. It's so long. So if you imagine panel one being so long, your eyes go, you know, like a foot across your lap and you're looking to your right. Now your head has to turn all the way back to panel two, which is way on the left.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you leave the eye? And like, it definitely was a struggle to figure it out.
Did you draw them full size? Like,
yeah. Oh, so wow. It wouldn't fit on my desk. I had to like attach it, reattach it, draw on half of it. I had to fold it over carefully and it was hanging off of one side. It was definitely a pain in the ass.
That's cool though. I mean, I bet those originals are, if you're lucky enough to get a double page spread of that, it's going to be look very cool if you hang it up in your house or something.
And expensive to frame.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'll have all that art with me in San Diego. I'm also bringing it to France. We're doing a signing tour for Last Driver.
Oh, awesome.
We got a gallery in Paris that's going to host us, so that should be fun.
Oh, that's right, because Urban's putting it out too, right?
Yeah, my French publisher is going to have it all out first, but issue one will be out first in America.
I can't remember now, it's too many emails back and forth. Is the French one in color?
Both.
It is. Okay.
They always do color version of my stuff, and they do black and white. And I'm told that my black and white stuff, even Batman, my black and white is 50% of sales. So
damn.
In Europe, they're just more open to black and white, which is cool.
Yeah. Are you going to are you doing any other black and white stuff in America aside from the Ashcan?
So the opening scenes of the book are mostly uncolored.
That's true. That is right. Yeah.
I had Simon, who's really great and very patient with me.
Guys, don't worry. I am the editor on this book. I'm not asking all these questions because I don't know the answers.
Why don't you answer that then? Simon, I was really picky with my colorists, and we tried to come up with like a limited palette. And he really wants to go with, he loves color. Like, obviously he's a colorist. And I see color as more of muted storytelling tool, not as bright green would look great here. Oh, look at that, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I'm right and he's wrong or whatever, but yeah, so the opening scenes though are all black and white, but we just added a hint of orange. So he did like gray halftone dots and fades and stuff. So it's mostly black and white with like a little bit of accents here and there. Yeah, I'm trying to think of a movie that utilized it. I'm trying to kind of drawing a blank.
Schindler's List.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. The girl, the only color was her pink coat. Awesome. Thanks, Clay.
Yeah. This is like the Schindler's List of car comics.
Awesome. Said by the Orson Welles of comics.
Yeah. Can we put that on the trade? Can I get that quote on the trade?
Oh, man. It's funny. Image was asking me to like bug my friends to get like a quote or a testimonial for the cover. And I don't like asking. I don't think people really buy books because, you know, Stephen King has a quote on the cover or whatever. I could be wrong. And I think it's just something that publishers do because the employees feel like they need to do something. Anyway, so I wasn't able to get a quote in time, but Fiona Staples did give me a good one. And I told her about the book, told her about Native American stuff and all the other problematic, you know, landmines. And she said, like, what did she say? She goes, I hope my friend Sean gets every bit of blowback he deserves from this book. So I wrote to Image and like, can I use this as my, because everyone knows Fiona. I feel like leaning into that is kind of like, you know, anti-marketing, which actually might work for the vibe.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
They never wrote me back.
That is a great quote. That's yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to try to put it onto issue. Is it too late to add a quote to cover one?
Cover one. Yes.
Okay.
Is that true? No, I guess it's not. Because, yeah, all right. we have till, I think, the beginning of August before we get all the final files in.
All right. I'll nudge Eric at Image to see what he thinks of that. Because if that makes him uncomfortable, I don't want to put them in that spot.
Sure.
They're already concerned for a few other reasons. But
yeah. And you know, it's if you want to elaborate on that at all, it's a book with that deals with Native American stuff. Mm-hmm.
LGBT,
yeah, culture.
We got a
stuff.
Lot of politics in the beginning. It's in the world in the future. There's been a second civil war, which has been like kind of a digital civil war, where people in the country country split in half. You've got all like the more wealthy, educated people living in cities where there are resources, like in Judge Dredd. They live in these mega cities, and then everyone else lives in the desert in between them. And it's to a point where it's about to get walled off. So there's no more interaction between the two sides. So it's a poorly thin metaphor for what's happening in America right now, I think. And, you know, there's a 2-page spread that shows the two sides fighting each other. And it has stuff like, you know, broken Bud Light bottles on one side and, you know, trans flags on the other side. And, you know, Greta Thunberg, polar bears wear. So it's like, I think it does a good job of sort of summarizing what political, whatever side that you're on, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But after that spread, it's really just a book about pushing back against AI and the wealthy,
yeah.
Which I think is something that pretty much unites most of us, no matter which side of the political aisle you're on.
Yeah, yeah. Especially, did you see all that stuff where like Instagram was secretly putting in an AI thing that you had to shut off, and then thankfully enough people spoke up about it that they shut it down?
No, I'm glad.
Yeah, it's just
it's
the AI stuff. It's so frustrating because like it very well could be a very useful tool,
mm-hmm.
you know, for certain things used in certain ways, but the way that they're trying to just make it layer it into everything is just insane to me.
And in the creative field, it's ubiquitous that we all agree we hate this.
Yeah.
But my assistant Jake is in the banks. Banks love this. They're trying to get Jake and his employees to like use this more. It's a time saver. Every other bank is using it. So they're having very different conversations.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I think it's great for certain things. I mean, something like that where if you work in an industry that has mountains and mountains of paperwork and published materials and stuff, and you need to very quickly be like, okay, I'm looking for this. Does this appear ever? Blah, blah, blah. And then you have the entire knowledge of your company right there that can give you an answer. That's great.
Yeah, I agree. There's good AI and bad AI. Good AI can find a cure for cancer. We all want that. if it's going to track our kids, we don't want that. Like,
right.
At the very least, we should label it. Like, I saw a political ad put out by Republicans, and it was, I don't know, it was attacking, you know, woke liberals. And it had, I think it was Obama slowly walking in front of like a darkened White House. And he's like walking by AOC and shaking her hand. And then he walks by Bernie and a few other like the people that, you know, my conservative friends love to dunk on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all AI. And yeah. My in-laws who are in their 80s, they don't know that that's not real footage.
Yeah.
And, you know, they are, you know, very much for Trump, which is their right. But I just wish we had labels on this shit so we can know what's real. I mean, that's another thing that we all agree on.
Yeah.
You know, like when we put labels on video games to say that they're inappropriate, you know, or rating things NC-17 or whatever. Yeah, we need labels on this shit. And you shouldn't be allowed to make fake political ads to fool people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Once you start infringing on, like, people's identities and stuff, I think it's really...
Yeah.
And not to mention the fact that to make those things is... What is it that uses like a gallon of water or 10 gallons of water every minute or something, or something insane?
Yeah, the drain. And now these mega factories they want to build in small states to help house the, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And, oh, it's building jobs. Oh, it ruins water supply. Yeah. Oh, it's good for economy. Oh, is it though? And it's all hard to follow because I'm sure there's interesting things to consider on both sides. And it's not necessarily a genie we can put back in the bottle
right.
to some degree.
They're happy to build all these houses for computers. What about building houses for people?
I know. So it's funny because like when I first wrote this book, it was like a year and a half, 2 years ago. ICE hadn't happened yet.
Right.
The police confrontation hadn't happened yet. There wasn't, like a militarized government police force interfering, you know, whether you support it or not. It's just something we hadn't seen yet.
Yeah.
And I had to change a lot of the wording in my book because I had a word in there that said the Civil War happened, but no blood was shed. It was all digital. And now as I turn on the news, well, blood is being shed. So now I have to change that. And there's like a bunch of little things that you pointed out that I'm glad that we caught. And like reality caught up to sci-fi so quickly in the past 2 years. Like I didn't realize I was making a book about AI. And now it's very clear that that's what this book will be perceived to be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's wild, man. Like stuff is like, the one that really caught me, just in general, not in this book specifically is, I started watching the new Daredevil series, the Daredevil Born Again on Disney.
Yeah.
It was the whole thing was shot before Trump 2. Right.
Mm.
But it didn't come out until after he was elected. And after all the stuff with ICE started up and everything, and the entire first season of that show is the Kingpin is now the mayor of New York, and he has a secret police that he's using to round up essentially immigrants and stuff. And I was like, this is shockingly on the nose for something that was made before any of this stuff ever happened. I mean, at the time, I guess it was like speculative worry, but then real life caught up to it very quickly.
No, it's hard for my liberal friends not to see Trump as Lex Luthor, but my in-laws would disagree, and it's hard, you know. And I'm definitely a liberal, but I find myself as like a 7 out of 10 liberal. I'm not 10 out of 10. And I've been frustrated by comics, and I've gotten in trouble on Twitter for not towing the party line, you know, when George Floyd happened, or, you know, the timing of things that I've said were clearly off. And I look back at what I said, I'm like, I still stand behind that. Like, I think I was right and everyone else was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, when you get canceled or people come after you, there's never an apology. There's never anybody who's like, oh, we were out of line. There's no head of the snake.
Right.
So, you know, part of this book for me has been like putting my feelings into like how much it sucks to be when people try to cast you aside and turn you into a Frankenstein of things that you aren't. And push you away. And that's what happened to the main character. His name is Clutch. You know, like, he's a Native American, but he's a gearhead. So people on the left are mad that he didn't stand up enough for Native American rights. And they don't like that he's into fossil fuel burning. He's a race car driver.
Mm-hmm.
And people on the right don't like him because maybe they're a little bit racist, or they don't like that he's a Hollywood elite hanging out with, you know, whatever, with more money. So, like, he's sort of been shunned by both sides. And he's fine with it because he just doesn't want to be told what to do. And it's basically about his family line and about how his mother started on a reservation and, you know, how he got into racing cars and driving, and then the world sort of fell apart around him, and he's trying to teach his granddaughter lessons. And, you know, it's not as over the top as I'm making it sound. It's really told through the lens of cars, car culture. So there's a lot of, like, you know, fun, goofy car stuff in there. It's not a very political book per se. Like, it's mostly action adventure type stuff, but there's definitely a lot of thinly veiled, you know, metaphors for things that are going on. And I don't think it's going to necessarily be left or right. It's just a book that's right down the middle. And no matter who you vote for, I think you'll see a lot of validity in it. Mm-hmm. At least I hope so. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for like Image Comics, they're like, oh, great, Sean Murphy book. Wait, why is he drawing pictures of Greta Thunberg? Uh-oh, is he going to say something stupid on Twitter now? You know, and I got all these people writing from Image and all their pronouns are listed on their emails. And like, I don't do that, you know, and I'm fully supportive of it, but I can already sense their hesitation. So here I am telling Eric, like, hey, can I use Fiona Staples to quote that'll throw my book under the bus? Mm-hmm. Ha ha. Mm-hmm. That's just not what marketing wants to deal with.
Yeah. Know? Yeah.
Well, I understand.
To talk about one thing that you changed that I think would really have ruined the book. The main character's name originally, when we first started working on it, I think I had come up with the name Gus, like, just as, cause I like this working class name. And then you really wanted to call him R.I.P. Blaze.
Yeah. Rest in peace.
Yeah. So his name originally was Gus Rip Blaze.
And no, I don't think
go ahead. Could not fathom how much I hated that.
I just wanted to call him Rip Blaze, but people would just call him Rip.
Yeah.
It started because when it's a Kurt Russell book, the first line is like, I thought you were dead, mm-hmm. just like in Escape from New York. So I'm like, all right, let's make his name Rest in Peace because mm-hmm. he keeps escaping death and people just assume he's dead. I didn't know you were still attaching Gus to it.
Well, either way, Rip Blaze, I don't love. I can't tell if it's a bong related or a fart related thing, you know.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
But when you came back, you're like, his name's Clutch now. I was like, oh, thank God. Whatever you do now, it's fine.
So the metaphor is a clutch is a part of a car where it's stuck between two opposing forces. You've got the wheels that are moving and the engine that's moving, and they're moving at different rates. So they both have to push against the clutch, which is designed to take a lot of pressure and heat so that the two sides can start getting along. So you can see why the metaphor works for this book. And we don't really understand why he's called Clutch until like the last page. It's kind of a throwaway line.
I also really, as I was reading through it, there's a certain point where I can't remember the context of it, but I sent you a message and I was like, so, but like, what's his like real name? And you're like, no, his real name's Clutch. Like, this is the name his mother gave him. It's Clutch. Like, okay. I mean, that's fine. It was like, I was expecting it to be a nickname, but that's totally fine.
So yeah, it's a nickname culture. So Native Americans, they don't give you your adult name. Like,
sure.
You come out of the womb, you're called one thing. And when you earn your real name, they'll change it. And this is sci-fi, and it's not based on any one tribe. Like, they're not Navajo or Mohican specifically. It's designed to be vague, mostly so I don't get in trouble. And they're all obsessed with cars, so they call each other car names. Yeah. So his mother's name is Bluebird because she fixes buses. And anyone who remembers going to school as a kid, you were on Bluebird buses. His brother's name is Trans Am. The bad guy's name is Firebird. And yeah, they just all have, like, cool car names. It's a little absurd, but the book's sort of designed to be like a B movie from the 80s, so you just kind of go with it.
Yeah. If your name was, let's say your name was like Stingray, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh yes, the Corvette Stingray. What happens if Stingray grows up and he just like really prefers like a Mazda Miata?
I guess you could call him Miata after a while. You can just change your name.
Okay.
Well, I mean, they're all... They're smugglers and they're in gangs, so they have like code names. So who knows, man? It's science fiction. If you really don't love Stingray and now you're a Miata guy, all right. But you got to join the Japanese Miata gang, you know? That's the fun thing, too, is the bad guy in this is Firebird. And he's like clearly like racist, sexist, homophobe, over the top, definitely like Lobo in it. Toned to be like Lobo for me. Like, not saying Lobo is those things, but my character is like Lobo plus that stuff. But his gang is filled with women and people of color, and you know, he's not as awful as he likes to come across. Like, he sees himself as a bad guy, but as the story goes on, you realize there's more to him than that, which is kind of a fun thing to play with.
Shit, there was one other thing I was going to say, but I forget. If you have something to say, go.
Yeah, so, okay. I reached out to a Native American tribe for some help on a word that I needed. And I needed to decide what tribe Clutch is. And in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, there was a town, well, where Norman Rockwell's studio was. It's Stockbridge, Massachusetts. A long time ago, there was a Native American town there, and they all converted to Christianity. It was called a praying town, and it was a mix of different Algonquin tribes, including Mohican. And they even helped us during the Revolutionary War, fighting alongside white people against the British. Eventually, we pushed them out because it sucks. And they went to Wisconsin. So they have an actual Mohican tribe that's like a Wisconsin. I can't remember what it's called on top of my head. So I called them. Because I needed to decide what Clutch is, even though I don't say he's Mohican in the book, like between all of us, that's kind of what I have his lineage as being. And I asked them, like, listen, I need a name for a mechanic. And this woman called me back, and she was very nice. And she goes, thanks for reaching out. A lot of, you know, people write and put Indians into books all the time, and they don't bother to even ask us. We appreciate that. And I was like, well, I'm a little worried because I'm a white dude. And, you know, this isn't necessarily subject matter that I want to get in trouble for. She's like, no, you're good. Like, she didn't mind being called Indian and all that stuff. She was saying,
and you, like, just kept doing it.
Oh, just hitting over the head, asking about feathers. I mean, it got really brutal until she hung up. No. And yeah, she was like, oh, the Indian stuff, that's like a white person thing. They self-flagellate, maybe for good reason, but we don't care. That was at least her take. Anyway, so I was like, well, I need a word for the book. It's just one word for mechanic. And she goes, I don't speak our language. We don't have the language written down. It's called sleeping language. And there are elders in our tribe that even they don't agree on how to word things, especially word like mechanic, because cars didn't exist back then. Right. So she's like, let me get back to you. So she goes away for a week, comes back, and she said, she gave me a really great answer. And I can't even pronounce these words because there's like three A's in a row, a couple of, you know, umlauts in there. And I just cut and pasted, and I'm just going to assume. Anyway, the word is two words. One, they have a word for a person who fixes things. Sort of like medicine man, but not. So they gave me that word. And then the second word for car is something that drags itself along. So they have a word for something that drags itself along. So they would use that word for carriages and stuff back in the day. And that's the best word that they could come up with for car. So the word that, so like, I thought that was wild, because this is the fun part about research, is you'll find stuff you never would have thought of.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So for the sequel now, I want to have an inside joke where Clutch goes up to someone and they're like, how you doing? And he's like, you know, dragging myself along.
That literally you and one other person will get.
Yep. No, anyone listening now.
Yeah.
So 300 people, tops.
Yeah. So they use that word for cars, or, you know, like the one disappointing son who never amounted to anything.
Perfect. Yeah, exactly. Well, and Clutch's grandmother, sorry, Clutch's mother needs a name because they're burying her, and there has to be a name on the tombstone. And like, her nickname was Bluebird, but her real name was whatever the hell. I'm not even gonna try to pronounce it.
Sure,
but yeah, it's in the book.
Yeah, nice.
And if someone ever challenges me on stage, like, I absolutely can defend where that came from. So bring it on. And there's a ton of problematic stuff I can't defend, but that one I can defend.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that modern nicknaming isn't as thoughtful as that, because when I was in San Diego, I went on to the USS Midway, the museum, the aircraft carrier museum, and you go through and you see all the quarters and stuff, and you go into the ready room, and you see where, I think it's the ready room, and on the wall they had a list of all these name tags that were all call signs. I was like, oh, that's cool, you know, like Maverick and Iceman and stuff. And I had asked a friend of mine whether or not, you know, like, is this like a nickname? Do you get to choose this? And she said, no, it's like a nickname. Her dad was in the Air Force, and he got his because they were mispronouncing his last name. And so that just became his call sign. And so I'm looking at this stack of call signs, and I'm going down, and it's like, you know, Gunslinger and cool guy, and then I get down to the bottom, and one of them is just Chet. And then underneath that is douche. And I was like, oh man, I really hope douche did okay his time in the Navy.
Yeah. You know, when you're really in trouble, send in the douche. And he's like, I'm here. I mean, you got to lean into it. Like, anytime you get a nickname, you can't fight it. It's just going to make your life worse. You have to own up to it and just lean into it. Yeah. So I hope douche lived up to his name.
Yeah. I don't know what that looks like, but yeah, me too.
Have you ever had a nickname, Clay?
So my aunt used to call me Clay Dog, which then morphed into Dogman. So she still refers to me as Dogman.
Oh, that's great. That's like a wrestling name.
Yeah, I would take Dogman is probably the better of the nicknames I've ever gotten. Most of the time through school and everything, it would just be I would introduce myself and they'd be like, "Clay, you mean like art class?" I'm like, "Yeah." And then Clay Aiken showed up and they're like, "You mean like Clay Aiken?" I'm like, "Yeah, just like Clay Aiken." Yes.
Thank God that someone came around. Yeah. I used to get made fun of for Gordon, even in New England, even though that's a Scottish name. People had a hard time with that because you had Gordon's fish sticks.
It's spelled
differently. So they used to fish stick man. They tried. That didn't stick.
How often were you throwing around Gordon back then?
You know, your kids. People will ask you what your middle name is.
Oh, sure. And, sure.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't insist on going by Sean Gordon Murphy out of the womb.
You're 8 years old with the old tie and suit on.
Exactly. But in comics, Gordon, that word has meaning with, you know, Batman. So it never really got much pushback in comics.
No, once you get out of school, names are fine, generally.
Yep.
That's interesting, though, because, I mean, growing up in New England, you have the most Irish name you could possibly have.
Yep.
And so somehow you didn't get a cool one like Murph or something? Or
well, yeah, but everyone goes Murph or Murphy Smurfy or just, you know. My nickname when I was a landscaper was Muffin.
Oh, and, I remember you telling me that. Yeah.
Yeah. There were two Seans on the crew. One Sean was bigger, way more jacked than I was. Mm-hmm. And he was like Muscle Sean. And the opposite of that is Muffin. And it was set out of love. And I knew better than to fight a nickname. Mm-hmm. And there was this other kid on the crew named Chad. Chad was terrible. He sucked. He drove off of people's lunches by accident once.
Boy.
We never let him live it down. You know when you get like a group of guys together, in order to bond, one guy has to go down?
Yeah.
That was Chad.
Yeah.
And Chad tried to fight his nickname. And he was also like a Dave Matthews Band fan, which made it even worse for us.
Oh, boy.
We were just like, ugh, with his shell necklace and his PacSun shirt.
Woof.
Fucking Chad. Anyway, he tried to fight his nickname. And I saw what happened to him. And he was eventually like shamed off the crew and forced to quit. So they look at me next like, "You're going to fight us on Muffin?" I'm like, "No, sir. I'm here to shovel." And I did just fine.
Yeah.
So I don't mind being called Muffin.
Take note, everyone.
coming up now.
It is funny, though, because it is that kind of thing where it's like, Muffin, how did you get the nickname Muffin? It's like, well, one day I had a muffin for breakfast. And that's it.
It's like Big Tuna from
Big
Office.
Tuna. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a kid in my college that wanted his name. He wanted us to call him Strider.
Oh, boy.
And we were like, fuck you.
Oh, boy.
And I don't know if it's New England culture where you and I grew up, we don't love people who try to cop ego like that and pull rank. So we're quick to cut you down. But it's wild. Like my friend Jock, the word Jock in Scotland doesn't mean the same thing. And he's been going by it for so long. Even his wife calls him Jock. And his real name is Mark.
Oh.
It never occurred to me to pick a cool name for my career. I'm sort of stuck with Sean Murphy.
I think it's a slippery slope, man. Because if you pick a name like that at the beginning of your career,
right,
you're probably still like late teens, early 20s when you start doing that.
Right.
You better pick something that stands the test of time and isn't like based on Lord of the Rings character like your friends there.
Right. Or the Sega game, more likely, knowing him.
Yeah.
But you know, it's fun. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to go out with a cool name like that, like call me He-Man, call me Conan, go fuck yourself. We're not going to do that.
You know how long I had no idea that Frank Quitely was a fake name?
Oh, yeah. For quite frankly.
Yeah. Never even occurred to me.
What's that called? Anagram?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't do words. Anyway.
But then our friend Bengal. So what I'm finding now is because everyone meets themselves on the internet, people have careers posting on Instagram. You usually pick an avatar name, mm-hmm. and a lot of artists will just absorb that name as their name when they professionally.
Interesting. Okay.
So yeah, so it's a little bit easier now to get away with it. And Bengal is from France, and he loves Bengal tigers. And you know, we just assumed his name was Bengal or Bengal, or I don't know what he go. I forget his real name at this point. Not that it matters. So you can get away with doing that now. Like if Strider picked like Strider 1234 for his like, you know. Shit posting on a message thread. Maybe he could have taken that name with him, but no, yeah. Not the way he did it.
I've always been, as I'm sure this will not shock you, I've always been fascinated by pro wrestling culture where you end up with nicknames for your nickname. So like you've got Triple H. So the real guy's name is Paul Levesque. His character's name is Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Ooh.
Then he, when he was like a blue blood kind of aristocratic character, and then he rebranded himself, but he kept the name and just shortened it to Triple H.
Yeah.
And from
that stuck.
And that stuck. And then, but from that point, people start calling him nicknames for Triple H. Like they'll call him H or Trips or something like that. And it's like, man, you can't get short enough or far enough away from your own name without someone giving you a nickname for a name that you use all the time.
I love it, man. It's funny the way words work.
Yeah. And I'm going to use that as an excuse to plug my own book, Hard Style Juice, which is, if you're listening to this, it's probably out in print now. It comes out on the 15th or 14th of July. So
yeah, man,
go check that out.
What conventions are you going to this year so people can pick that up?
Well, I just got rejected from New York for the... I am now 1-for-17 getting table at New York. I'll be at Fan Expo Boston in August, and I'll be at Wicked Comic Con also in Boston in October. And I think that's it unless something else pops up for the year.
You got to do MegaCon next year.
Yeah, I should look into that now because I know that sells out pretty fast.
Yeah,
I
wanna do it. It's easier to get into. It's more attendance than San Diego and New York.
Damn.
It's actually the biggest show in the country. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Easy flight, same time zone, direct flight from Boston.
Yeah.
You should definitely do it.
Yeah. I liked Denver. I might do it again, but I like to try and get at least one if I can on the West Coast, if it's not cost prohibitive. I'd like to do MegaCon. MegaCon looks pretty cool. I've heard nothing but good things, but
yeah, Denver was okay for us. We didn't quite make what we wanted to. So we're going to, the market's just not big enough there. And that's, I'd love the state. I used to live there. For you, I would say, Comic-Con LA, which is run by the same people that San Diego.
Yeah.
That's a good show. It's got a big artist alley. You should be able to get in.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, Portland and Seattle.
Right. Yeah. I've actually, one of the things I wanted to do this year is I wanted to try to do a couple horror shows. Cause I went to a horror convention last year, just a small one. And I really liked the vibe of it. And I think I talked to a few people there and I like people doing comics and art and stuff. And I was like, how does this do for you? And they were like, well, if you have horror stuff, you tend to do pretty well. So, I haven't managed to pull that off yet. I was going to do one in February, but it got canceled for reasons I won't go into now. But it's fairly wild. There's a big one in Worcester that I'm trying to get into called Silver Scream, but, it seems a little bit tough to get through the door on that one. So I'm looking for a few things. I was talking to someone about maybe doing something out in LA in January or something. So I'm going to try and expand a little bit, try something different too.
What about, Mohegan Sun?
Oh, Terrificon?
Yeah.
I've heard a lot about that. I heard that one's really good. Yeah, I might try.
Yeah, it's cool.
Check that one out.
Yeah, I mean, for you, it's just like a 2-hour, 3-hour drive, maybe.
Yeah.
It's cool being in a casino. Like at night, you just go craps tables, and it's a different vibe for a comic show, which is kind of fun.
Will the blackjack table take drawings of Spider-Man as collateral?
Is it the black costume?
I can be. Sure, whatever you want.
Blackjack, black Spider-Man? Yeah. It should go over fine.
Awesome. I'll just drawings of Gambit. Can I put down a drawing of Gambit with the holding the card I need? Does that count?
They're like, sir, yes, but not a bunch of pogs. We need you to have chips. We're not going to tell you again, sir.
Yeah. Anyway, we should probably wrap up. But yeah, I don't. There's a couple other episodes you said that we might want to touch on, right?
These were the two that came to mind.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll try to think if there's anything else. But yeah.
But yeah, we might be back. We might not be. We might be back doing all of Justice League Unlimited. We'll see. We'll talk about it. But thank you guys for listening. Go pick up Last Driver when it comes out. Go pick up Hardstyle Juice. And come see us at shows. And thank you, Sean.
Thanks, Clay. Appreciate your time.
We'll see you next time. Let the good times roll.